Most of the information you hear today will come from two books. The first book is Secrets of the Federal Reserve by Eustace Mullins, and the second book is Give Me Liberty, a book by Jerry Spence. Both books are well worth reading. You should get them. This program will deal with the Rothschild banking dynasty. The Rothschild banking dynasty began with the pawn shop. The pawn shop is the poor man's bank. Its interest rates are high because the loans are small and the rates must be high in order for the owner of the pawn shop to make enough money to keep his doors open. His earnings on each loan is smaller than a commercial bank's earnings because the amount loaned to each customer is smaller. Even though it doesn't cost much more to make a loan of $1,000 than it does to make a loan of $25, the pawn shop must use his own money. He cannot create out of thin air what he lends. If both the commercial bank and the pawnbroker make 10 loans a day, and the bank's total average daily loans are $25,000, while the pawn shop's average daily loans are, let's say, $100, it's easy to see who will become the richest if both are charging the same interest rate. So the pawnbroker must charge more, not because he's taking advantage of the poor person, but because the loans are not as large as the commercial bank's loans, and the pawnbroker must charge more in order to make a living. Now when Joe Sixpack needs $50, he goes to the pawn shop and leaves his coat or his watch and walks off with his $50. It's no different than a homeowner taking out a mortgage on a home he is purchasing, or the finance company taking out a chattel mortgage on an automobile loan, or a businessman having a lien against his inventory and receivables with a commercial bank. Large corporations use their stock for security when obtaining loans. All of these lending institutions have collateral which can be repossessed should the borrower default on them. The pawnbroker, the credit union, the finance company, or the bank does not want your coat or your watch or your house or your car. They want you in debt. They would love for you to pay them interest in perpetuity. Think about it. Once your car is paid off, you got all kinds of letters and cards offering to finance another car or refinance your house. They don't want to repossess anything. They want the interest. Countries borrow most of their money from central banks. One of the largest and most powerful, maybe the most powerful central bankers, started out as a pawnbroker. The pawnbroker's name was Mayer Amschel Rothschild. I'm going to tell you what little I know about the Rothschilds, but it's very difficult to get information about them at all. Libraries of nonsense have been written about them, but there is no book about them that is both revealing and accurate. A woman who planned to write a book entitled Lies About the Rothschilds abandoned it, saying it was relatively easy to spot the lies, it proved impossible to find out the truth. The original name of the Rothschilds was Bauer, but the name was changed as far back as the 16th century when Isaac Eichmann-Bauer coined the name Rothschild. The family's ascent to international prominence began with the birth of Mayer Amschel Rothschild in 1744 in Frankfurt am Main, Germany. Mayer Amschel Rothschild was the son of a small merchant and money changer in Frankfurt. Like his father, Mayer was also a money changer, and both father and son traded with the Prince of Hesse. Mayer opened a pawn shop in Frankfurt. To advertise his business, he took the coat of arms of the city of Frankfurt, which was an eagle on a red shield. He then added 5 golden arrows depicting his 5 sons. This is where his name Rothschild came from. Rothschild in the German language is red shield. In the book Pawns of the Game, author William Guy Carr tells of a meeting Mayer Amschel Rothschild held in his pawn shop in 1773 when Amschel Rothschild was only 30 years old. He had invited 12 other wealthy and influential men to meet him in Frankfurt. His purpose was to convince them that if they pooled their wealth and resources, they could then control the world revolutionary movement and use it as their manual of action to win ultimate control of wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the world. His plan was to create economic conditions that could reduce the masses to a state bordering on starvation by unemployment whenever they desired. They would use propaganda to arouse feelings of hatred and revenge against the ruling classes by exposing all real and alleged cases of extravagance, licentious conduct, injustice, oppression, and prosecution. His plan consisted of 15 points. Point 1. He said that law was just a force in disguise. By the laws of nature, right lies in force. Point number 2. Political freedom is an idea, not a fact. Preach liberalism so that the electorate, for the sake of an idea, would yield some of their power. Point 3. Gold, he said, had usurped the power of liberal rulers. Point 4. It would make no difference to the success of the plan if a country was destroyed by external or internal foes, because the victor would have to ask for capital, which would be entirely in their hands. Point 5. Any and all means were to be used because a ruler who governed by a moral code left that ruler in an unstable position. Point 6. The word right is an abstract word and means nothing. Our right, he said, lies in force. Point 7. To act by the right of the strong, to reconstruct all existing institutions, and to become the sovereign lord of all those who left to us the rights to their powers by laying them down to us for their liberalism. Point 8. The power of our force must remain invisible until we are strong enough that no cunning or force can undermine it. Point 9. Use moral corruption, drugs, alcohol, to corrupt the youth of all nations. Point 10. Seize property by any means and without hesitation, if by doing so they secured submission and sovereignty. Point 11. They were the first to put forward the slogan, liberty, equality, and fraternity into the mouths of the masses, which set up a new aristocracy. Point 12. The qualifications for this new aristocracy is wealth, which is dependent on us. Point 13. Direct wars in such a manner so that the nations on both sides would be in their debt. Let me get away from these points for a minute and give you a little note here. If you will look back at every war in Europe during the 19th century, you will see that they always ended with the establishment of the balance of power. Since the beginning of the 19th century, there has been a balance of power in Europe. With every reshuffling, there was a balance of power in a new grouping around the House of Rothschild, in England, in France, or Austria. They grouped nations so that if any king got out of line, a war would break out, and the war would be decided by which way the financing went. Researching the debt positions of the warring nations will usually indicate who was to be punished. Go back to point 14 now. Candidates for office should be servile and obedient to their wishes. Point 15. All outlets of public information would be controlled by them and used for propaganda. I want to add another note here, another point from Jerry Spence's book, Give Me Liberty. He noted that General Electric owns NBC. Westinghouse owns CBS, which is now the largest broadcasting company in the nation. Disney owns ABC. Then Turner merged with Time Warner, which became the largest news corporation. Gannett, the nation's largest newspaper publisher, purchased Multimedia Incorporated, which gave Gannett several TV and radio stations, cable franchises, and nationally syndicated talk shows. Thomson Newspapers owns 70 daily newspapers in North America. the public broadcasting system, the last of the supposed free voices in America, has teamed up with Reader's Digest. This publisher is one of the six corporations that grosses more than half of all book revenues in the country. Less than 200 media executives control what is fed to vulnerable American minds. That's a ratio of about 1 million minds for every one media executive. Perhaps the scariest aspect of this absolutely dehumanizing concentration of media power. So few controlling so many. Is humanity really outclassed 1,000,000 to 1? The vulnerable can't seem to get enough. It's not unusual to see single-family homes with 2 or even 3 satellite TV dishes. Even Gore Vidal observed the corporate grip on opinion in the United States is one of the wonders of the Western world. No first world country has ever managed to eliminate so entirely from its media all objectivity, much less dissent. In Boston, a group of boycotters bought TV time on a Boston TV station to air a commercial attacking Folgers Coffee for its economic connections to the war in El Salvador. Procter & Gamble immediately canceled all of its advertising on the station that carried this ad. Since then, we are told, no other broadcasters have been willing to run the anti-Folgers spot and risk the same treatment. On March 6, 1995, Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich spoke to a corporate leaders at a closed-door Washington dinner. He told his audience that corporate leaders should consider advertising boycotts of any newspapers that oppose their views. Later in an interview, he said, "If you are prepared to be tough-minded about it, the major 20 advertisers in this country by themselves could impose a standard because among them they are such a dominant force in the market." Now back to Mayor Amschel Rothschild's plan. He also said that panics and depressions could ultimately result in a new order of a one-world government. Okay, now let's have a little less philosophizing and a little more history. The following comes from Mullins, who obtained a lot of his facts from the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1902. Here's what they said. Mayor Amschel Rothschild started a dynasty by first managing the business and financial affairs of the nobleman Hess, who had furnished Hessian mercenaries in the Revolutionary War to fight the colonials. Hess made a fortune in this enterprise, and he entrusted Rothschild with the money to invest. Mayor Rothschild made huge profits, both for Hess and himself. Because of his success, he got other investors. In 1785, he moved to a larger house, and he called it the Green Shield, which he shared with the Schiff family. Remember the Schiff family. This family has also played a very important role in world events for the past 200 years. The Schiff family will be mentioned again in future programs. When Mayor Amschel Rothschild I died, he left his 5 sons a family banking house and an enormous fortune. The oldest son, Amschel Mayor Rothschild, took control of the family bank in Frankfurt. The second son, Solomon Mayor Rothschild, took over the family banking firm in Vienna. Nathan Mayor Rothschild, the third son, started the London branch of the family firm. Carl Mayer Rothschild, the fourth son, founded a branch bank in Naples, and James Mayer Rothschild, the fifth son, founded the Paris branch of the firm. One of the most valuable services they performed was for travelers going anywhere in Europe. Because of the threat of highwaymen, when a person traveled carrying gold or money, could really endanger them. So, someone living in Naples could take a pound of gold to Carl Mayer Rothschild and obtain a receipt showing how much he had deposited with Carl, and when he reached his destination, maybe in Frankfurt, show his receipt to Amschel Mayer Rothschild and receive a pound of gold, less the fee for the service. The Rothschilds became so rich and powerful that they soon began loaning money to kings. Kings in the 18th and 19th century were no different than the elected politicians we have today. They spent more of their treasuries than their treasuries were bringing in, and they had to go to their local pawn shop. But loaning money to a king is a little different than loaning money on a car. If the purchaser of the automobile defaults, the lender can and will tow the car away. But what about the financier who makes a loan to a king? Sure, he could go to the king and say, "Hey, king, I want my money." But the king could also say, "Off with his head." No, the king's lender needed more leverage than that. How do you tow away a vehicle? With another vehicle. How do you tow away a kingdom? With another kingdom. So there the Rothschild family was, making loans to kings all over Europe. Every king knew that every other king in every other country coveted every other kingdom, including his. Every king also knew that every kingdom in Europe was equal in power and strength. This was accomplished through the financing and manipulation of the Rothschild. So King A knew that King B was also in debt to the Rothschilds, and King A knew that if he didn't pay the Rothschilds could and would finance King B with enough money to take King A's kingdom away from him, and King A knew he would be denied enough financing to win the war. And wars helped make the Rothschilds rich. In 1815, Wellington and Napoleon were fighting at Waterloo. One story regarding Nathan Rothschild and his cunning during the Battle of Waterloo is that Nathan Rothschild in England had agents at Waterloo with carrier pigeons observing the battle. He got reports hours before anyone else knew what was going on, and he went out into the street and started selling government bonds and stocks that he held in English industries. A general panic set in England. Everyone began selling stocks and bonds. The prices plummeted 95% in 2 hours. What the public didn't know was that Nathan Rothschild had his agents buying the depreciated securities at the deflated price, and in 1 day's time, he owned England. Another story, as told by Eustace Mullins, is that Nathan went to Waterloo and saw that Napoleon was losing the battle, and he rushed back to Brussels. At Ostend, he tried to hire a boat to England. But because of a raging storm, no one was willing to go out. Rothschild offered 500 francs. Still, no one would go. Then he offered 700 francs, and finally 1,000 francs for a boat. One sailor finally said, "I'll take you for 2,000 francs. Then at least my widow will have something if we are drowned." Rothschild paid the 2,000 francs and found it to be a very good investment. Despite the storm, they were able to cross the channel. The next morning, Rothschild was at his usual post in the London Exchange. Everyone noticed how pale and exhausted he looked. Suddenly, he started selling, dumping large quantities of securities. Panic immediately swept the exchange. "Rothschild is selling," they said. "He must know that we have lost the Battle of Waterloo." Rothschild and his known agents continued to throw securities onto the market. Nothing could arrest the disaster. At the same time, he was quietly buying up all securities by means of secret agents whom no one knew. In a single day, he had gained nearly £1,000,000, giving rise to the saying, "The Allies won the Battle of Waterloo, but it was really Rothschild who won." Which story is true? Does it matter? Either way, the Rothschilds wound up owning England. In 1815, the Rothschilds owned and ran the Bank of England. Because of his success in speculation, Baron Nathan Mayer de Rothschild, as he now called himself, resigned as the supreme financial power in London. He exclaimed during a party in his mansion, "I care not what puppet is placed upon the throne of England to rule the empire on which the sun never sets. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire, and I control the British money supply. In 1820, King Louis had sold bonds to a group of bankers in France. Later, during a financial crisis, the King of France and the bankers were meeting in the King's palace, but James Mayer Rothschild was not invited because he was Jewish. He went anyway. He came in his carriage with 10 white horses, and he in his white ermine robes, but was forced to sit in a room outside the room where the meeting of the king and the other bankers was taking place. While he was sitting there twiddling his thumbs, people came scurrying in and out of the meeting room. After a while, King Louis came out and bowed to James Rothschild, then took him inside to the meeting. The bond market in France had collapsed. Once inside the room with the king, James Rothschild dismissed the other bankers and took over the task of financing the country alone. He had already built himself a mansion exactly like the king's palace at Versailles, but now in France, when financial favors were requested by the wealthy, they went to James Rothschild, not to the king of France. So now James Rothschild, without doubt, was the most financially powerful man in France, outside of the king himself, whose wealth was estimated at 800 million marks. While James, or Baron Edmund de Rothschild, as he wanted to be known, was worth 600 million marks. The combined wealth of all the bankers in France was 150 million marks less than that of James Rothschild. This gave him untold powers. He could unseat governments whenever he wanted to. He had overthrown the cabinet of Prime Minister Thiers. By 1849, Italy was not a unified nation. It was just a consortium of individual royal territories. Karl Rothschild in Naples had every kingdom in Italy in hock. The Vatican was so deeply in debt to him that he demanded the Pope have a public dinner in his, Karl's, honor, and he also demanded that he be served kosher food. During the meal, the Pope asked Karl if he recognized Rome as the holy city. Karl got up and said, "No, Jerusalem is the holy city." What could the Pope do? Good diplomacy requires that the borrower not argue with the lender. So now is Karl, or is not Karl, the main pawnbroker of Italy? Meanwhile, back in Frankfurt, Amschel Mayer Rothschild discovered an ambitious young baron by the name of Otto von Bismarck, who, with the help of Amschel Mayer's money, unified the German states into an empire. The Iron Chancellor, as Bismarck was called, kept journals or diaries like most men in power do. It's interesting to see that an entry in his journal in 1850 mentioned a Rothschild wedding he attended, and there he overheard the conversations of the Rothschilds discussing how to instigate a civil war in the United States. The idea, according to Bismarck, was to break the South away from the North, then have Mexico merge with the southern states, while at the same time have the western states made into a separate country. I guess we can go to Franklin Delano Roosevelt now, who said that in politics, nothing ever happens by chance. If it happens, it happens because it was planned that way. Oh well, why would the Rothschild want a civil war in the United States? By 1850, every country in Europe except Russia had a central bank. The only other wealthy and powerful country in Western civilization that didn't also have a central bank was the United States. Isn't it interesting to note that during Lincoln's travails, the only country who came to Lincoln's rescue was Russia? The Tsar sent half of his naval fleet to the port of New York, which protected that port from the southern gunboats, and he sent the other half to San Francisco to protect the harbor there. The Tsar's navy did not leave either port until victory was acquired by the Yankees. For the last 200 years, the history of the House of Rothschild has been, to an amazing degree, the backstage history of Western Europe. Because of their success in making loans, not to individuals, but to nations, they reaped huge profits. Someone once said that the wealth of the Rothschilds consists of the bankruptcy of nations. Here's something else from the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1902. They said that the financial career of the Rothschilds is the key to the history of the Jewish banking in the 19th century. The plan adopted by him of establishing branches in the more important European capitals, over which he placed his sons, and was followed by other Jewish banking houses. The other Jewish families that adopted the Rothschild plan of establishing local banking branches in Europe's cities include the Lazards, the Sterns, the Speers, the Siegelmans, the Warburgs, and the Lieb families. The influence of Jews on banking was due to the preliminary advantage given to them by their international position. That's how the Jewish Encyclopedia looks at the Rothschilds. Here's how this narrator looks at the Rothschilds. After every war the United States gets involved in, the United States finds itself owing to London and Wall Street several $100 million to men who never fought a battle, who never made a uniform, who never furnished a pound of bread, who never did an honest day's work in all their lives. The fact is that billions owned by the sweat, tears, and blood of American laborers have been poured into the coffers of these men for absolutely nothing. By the end of the 19th century, the Rothschilds controlled one half of the wealth of the world. One Jewish writer put it this way: "Only recently our race has given the world a new prophet, but he has two faces and bears two names. On the one side his name is Rothschild, leader of all capitalists, and on the other, Karl Marx, the apostle of those who want to destroy the other." Niles Weekly Register, Volume 49, has the following to say about the Rothschild influence on international high finance. They said that the Rothschilds are the wonders of the banking world. "We see the descendants of Judah after a persecution of 2,000 years, peering above kings, rising higher than emperors, and holding a whole continent in the hollow of their hands." The Rothschilds govern a Christian world. Not a cabinet moves without their advice. They stretch their hand with equal ease from Petersburg to Vienna, from Vienna to Paris, from Paris to London, from London to Washington. Baron Rothschild, the head of the house, is the true king of Judah, the prince of the captivity, the Messiah so long looked for by this extraordinary people. He holds the keys of peace or war, blessing or cursing. They are the brokers and counselors of the kings of Europe and of the republican chiefs of America. What more can they desire? Well, that's our story on the Rothschilds. Join us next time and we'll discuss the Second Bank of the United States. Hope to be able to talk to you then. Thanks for listening.